BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. So, where do you think we are?
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready? Yeah! And your show this evening will begin in 10.
Wembley Stadium? Nah. Madison Square Gardens in New York? No chance. We're actually at a relatively small hall in Norwich, waiting for a wrestling match to begin. So, what's In Touch doing there? In a few minutes, you'll find out. In the meantime, there's a sound that will need no explanation to keen Braillists. It's the Perkins Brailler, a robust typewriter-like machine designed in the United States by a Brit nearly 100 years ago. And it's still going strong, used by plenty of Braillists, me included. But recent publicity that the UK's last certified visually impaired repairer of the Perkins, Alan Thorpe, is looking for someone to follow in his footsteps. And that may have left the impression that if your old or even your new Perkins developed a glitch, there'd be no one left to fix it. Not so. The Royal National College for the Blind in Hereford has been repairing these Braillers for the past 25 years and is still in full swing. It has three technicians. Andy Powell is their technical support manager, and he joins me. Andy, just before we establish the situation over getting them mended, tell us a bit more about the Perkins Brailler for the uninitiated.
So we've got probably in excess of 100 Perkins Brailers on site, which are used by our students and staff. For a long time, we've serviced and maintained our own Perkins Brailers. And back in 2014, we decided to offer this service up to other people, whether it's individuals, councils, schools, local education authorities. And we've sort of been expanding as we go along. We're also the named warranty repairers for the RNIB. So if you buy a brand new Perkins from the RNIB and you unfortunately get a fault with it within that warranty period, you sort of speak to the RNIB, they will then send it back to us and we sort of fix it on behalf of Perkins USA. So it doesn't have to go all the way back to America and back to you again. So we do that as well.
So just to make it clear, do you need to go through the RNIB? Could you come to you direct?
Absolutely, because the RNIB is just there for warranty repairs. If it's out of warranty, then please just come to us. You can give us a phone call or email us. Or in fact, we've also got an online portal you can go to via our website and just fill some details in and one of us will get back to you and we can have a conversation then.
Just to clear up this business of certification, as I understand it, at the moment, your technicians, you included maybe, aren't individually certified, but RNC is certified as a place where they can be repaired. That sounds a bit bonkers to me. What's it mean?
Yeah, it does. So you're correct there, Peter. Individually, me and Ian and Tom aren't actually individually certified, but I've been in conversations with Perkins in America and we're trying to get that rectified as we speak. At the moment, the only way you can become certified is actually going all the way over to Perkins in America, staying with them for a week or two and then getting fully certified that way. Obviously, Perkins have got 100% faith in us, else they wouldn't ask us to do all their warranty repairs. And again, if you're ordering spares and parts, people would have to come to us because we're the only organisation to actually get those spares from Perkins in America as well.
Now, we're told that nowadays, none of the prisons are undertaking the work. I know one or two used to because I went and did pieces about them, but they've stopped. So, you know, if people want to get there, but are you the only people really now still doing it or are there one or two others?
No, there's one or two others. There's obviously Alan at ICANN and there's a few others. You know, there's like little pockets of Braille engineers all around the place. Like some other schools and colleges, you know, they have their own person comes in once, twice a week and will repair their Braillers on their behalf. You know, there's videos on YouTube and the Perkins have got some on their website, got some helpful basic instructions on how to sort of service your Perkins. So there are a few around the country. You know, it's not dead as the first reports come out.
See. So in the old phrase, reports of its death have been rather exaggerated.
Absolutely. Actually, because of the sort of success we're having at the moment, we've actually took on a new employee in August, Tom, and we're busily training up at the moment. Bit of succession training because we're all getting a bit older than we should do.
Right. Well, that's put the record straight. Andy Powell, thank you very much indeed. Now, back to Norwich.
We're going to kick it off with a singles match. Introducing first, the real-life daredevil, the man without fear, Just James!
Fighting name Just James, real name James Jones, is that rare thing, a visually impaired professional wrestler with just a little sight in his right eye. Well, we're at the World Association of Wrestling's Performance Centre in Norwich, where James is a hugely popular regular fighter. The WAW is run by the Knight family, a well-known family in the wrestling business, who gave James his chance, trained him, and where he's been a regular on the bill for the past 10 years. I recently went down to the Performance Centre to talk to James about his unusual choice of career.
It started from kids collecting trading cards at school, and I would see what the trading cards were, and I was like, who are these people that, you know, in these cool costumes on these cards? And then I started watching it on TV, and then continued to watch it even after I lost my sight, and then I ended up doing it as well.
Well, I mean, it's one thing kind of enjoying it and wanting to do it. It's another actually doing it. How did you manage to get involved, well, eventually, what became professionally?
When I was 16, I'd finished school and was in college by that point, and I wasn't getting on very well, and I'd started to see a therapist, and it came up in conversation in one of my sessions of what I would want to do. Not just, you know, in life and in my future, but what I'd like as a hobby or, you know, anything like that. And I talked about wrestling, thinking in my head, like, it's like an impossible thing. But, you know, I'm in therapy, so I might as well just, like, say what I want.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, between sessions, my therapist found WAW and called them one day. And then they basically said for me to come down to the gym and try a session. A one-to-one session with Zach and see what happens. At first, they were really unsure, understandably, but we all quickly realised at the same time, like, oh, like this could actually work if we get a formula down and get all this stuff down. But yeah, on the one hand, it's surprising that a blind guy works in wrestling. On the other hand, it's not.
Because, I mean, why?
Just because right,
I was
so
surprised, and I'm not usually surprised by blind people doing things.
It's just, I think it is just the nature of wrestling. I suppose having a real blind guy makes the difference in wrestling. You have people playing characters and then they have their own real life, but I kind of don't.
So you mean, in a way, you are the character you play?
Essentially, yeah. As soon as I step back through the curtain backstage, I'm still blind. So, you know, I don't just take the costume off and then it's done.
I think we need to explain this a bit for the people who aren't wrestling aficionados as you are, because, I mean, wrestling can be a sport. It can be a competitive sport. But this is more about role-playing, almost, and there's an element of choreography, if you like.
In a way, yeah. So wrestling as a sport, you'd be thinking of maybe sort of like Olympic wrestling, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas professional wrestling or pro wrestling, we just call it wrestling. Yeah, it's performative. It's very much like theatre. It's like dance also. It's essentially fighting, but choreographed in fancy costumes.
So pretty much pre-planned. You know what you're doing, the audience don't.
Yeah. In wrestling, you're trying to put over a story to the crowd of there's a good guy and a bad guy. What you're trying to tell is the story first, and then you add in all the physical stuff to make the story work. But people get injured all the time. It's very, very hard on your body. And even if you don't get, you know, any serious injuries, by the time you're done with it and you get to retirement age, your body's destroyed anyway.
Really? I mean, you're serious about that?
Yeah. That's why I say about not using the word fake when someone picks me up and slams me down. They are actually doing that. I'm just learning how to land properly, and they're learning how to place me. Pre-planned is the word.
And so how much practice, rehearsal, does that mean for you specifically? Do you count steps? Do you explain how you do it?
Yeah, so there's step counting in the ring. So for most rings, it's about 3 steps. So from one rope to the other. The ring that I work in most of the time is, I believe it's 18 by 18 feet. So it's quite big.
Square, basically.
Yeah. So there's the step count in, and then the other big one is audio cues with my opponents. Say they're going to do a move where they're going to run towards me, and I need to... Well, whether I need to move out of the way or not, you know, I just like to know it's coming. So they'll perhaps maybe shout while they're running, or if they're going to swing a punch, you know, shout while you swing the punch, scream while you swing the punch, which a lot of that sort of people do naturally anyway. So to the crowd, it doesn't seem like, oh, they're trying to give him hints, you know.
It's like, because you don't want it to look like that, do you?
No, that's the thing.
You want it to look spontaneous.
Yeah. Those are kind of the two crucial ones. And then, of course, you have a ref in the ring with you all the time. And any time I get stuck, I can just ask the ref for help. Yeah. And they'll tell me, you know, where I am or where my opponent is. Or...
Do you know most of the people you're fighting? Because there's about, outside of here, there are about 40, 50 people out there who are training as I talk to you.
I do at this company, yeah. I'm familiar with everyone and we all train together.
The last one is press up. Can't press up.
Well, I've never wrestled before, and I've not been in a wrestling ring, but I am now. I've gate-crashed a training session, so you'll hear them in the background there. And, James, you're going to show me a few moves, yeah?
Yeah. Okay, here we go. What we're going to do...
And this is Jason, who's a head trainer here.
James, if you put the pig's foot on, and all I want you to do, James, is turn it into a backhammer.
Okay. Just, if you just stay still, Peter.
I will.
He's just going to turn you straight into a backhammer.
Right, so he's now got my arm round by my back.
Right behind your back, okay?
Yeah.
Now, looking at this, to anybody looking in the first, second, third row, he's got a really painful hold on you.
Right, but he's not actually hurting me at all, is he?
That's the magic.
Ah, right.
That's where the magic happens, okay? Yeah. It's one of these things that if he was to lift that up your back, you'd be in an awful lot of pain.
Yeah.
Now, this is where you get payback. Wrap your arm around his head. That's it. No, you're good. Now, this hand, interlink your fingers. Yeah. Now, just tighten up on this hold a little bit. Tighten up. There you go. You've got him in an absolutely perfect headlock.
Okay? All right, then, there, James.
I'm good, yeah.
Okay, let him go. Okay. Right, you've just done what we call a pig's foot, top wrist lock.
Yeah.
We've done a reversal into a backhammer. We've also done a headlock. How do you feel about that?
I feel ready to go.
Yeah, that was really well done.
Yeah, yep. I begin to see the appeal, James.
There we go.
For the longest time, and I guess still, I'm always viewed as like a blind wrestler rather than a wrestler that's blind. And I know that that saying it makes it, that sounds kind of a little bit silly, but people should view me for my in-ring work and... the wrestling first, and then the blindness after. That's kind of the idea behind Just James. When I get announced, it's the man without fear, because it's a nod to Daredevil, the Marvel superhero. When I first started, we were really putting across the blind guy wrestling, you know, and the blind character. Now I don't walk out with my cane, even for my entrance.
Did you used to use the cane?
Yeah, I used to. I used to walk out with it and then, you know, take it into the ring with me and fold up and put it in the corner and make it really obvious that I can't see. It worked quite well for me as a wrestler because it was an easy way to get the crowd behind me and to play a good guy, or we call them a face or a baby face in wrestling. and a bad guy is a heel.
So it's sort of American in a way, that is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a baby face and a heel.
Baby face and a heel, yeah.
Yeah.
And then over time, as my skills were improving... and I wanted to develop the character into something a bit more. We thought it'd be good to move away from the blind thing and to try and see, you know, can we just, like, push me forward as a wrestler? I think it's really important for people that come to the shows to see that, you know, because, like, representation is a weird thing, and lots of people still don't understand representation, kind of what it means for people. You know, as a kid myself... obviously, I didn't have any blind wrestlers to watch on TV or, you know, didn't know of any. But I think, you know, if someone was to come to the show and be like, oh, I saw this wrestler on there and he was like, did this and did that and it was really cool. And then it turns out he's blind as well. People kind of not necessarily get inspiration from it, but I think it hits the mark a little bit more. People just don't know what to expect.
No. But it's quite subtle, isn't it? Because you have to be so good at this now. Mm. What you're saying is you want to be looking as if you're a really competent blind person.
Mm. Yeah, essentially, yeah. There's still fans that will come up to me after shows and will hold out a poster and a pen for me to sign and, like, not say anything. And whoever's standing with me has to be like, oh, James, someone wants you to sign something. And then we tell them, like, yeah, like, I actually can't see. This is it's real. So, but I always take that as a compliment.
Crowd fan behind James.
I mean, I have hit James as hard as I can.
Oh,
a bit like that, right to the back of the head.
We've not seen much of anything from James so far.
He is literally being ragged from pillar to post in this match. And there's that fire underneath James.
Lovely drop kick there.
James come back to life.
Swing and a miss. Big back suplex.
Hold, and Dylan Slade upon himself. Looking for the gut-wrench powerbomb.
Oh! Thing of beauty.
High angle right across the shoulders.
And that is it.
Winner of this opening contest by pinfall, Josh James!
With me is Zach Knight, one of the Knight clan. I mean, you've been training James. Tell me a bit about your sort of first impressions, you know, when he came here as a blind wrestler. Probably a bit unexpected to get one of those.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Actually, it comes a real shock. You know, this is the first real challenge that I've had as a coach. Even in the club now, there's, you know, people with Down syndrome, ADHD, mental health. You know, this is something for everyone. But when James came to me 10 years ago, I had to sort of overcome as much as he did, truthfully. You know, he's the man without fear for a reason. You know, that boy's, he's running, he's bumping, he's climbing the top rope, he's doing moves that he shouldn't be doing and what other people can't do. And that's the God's honest truth.
Give me an example of the kind of thing he does that you wouldn't have expected him to do.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't expect him to be able to get in there and hold his own. We used to spend 2, 3, 4 weeks working his matches for the safety of him and his opponent. But he's become so good now that he won't find out till an hour before the show, and he's that committed and that, you know, good that he can now sort his match out in that hour just like anyone else here and keep up with the level of anyone else. You know, James will run from one side of the ring to the other, dive through the middle and top rope onto someone on the outside not being able to see him. I'm scared to do that when I know the person's going to catch me. Imagine doing that blind. Peter, can you imagine doing that, sir?
I might have a go.
But oh, okay.
Goodness knows what would happen, but, happen, but I might have a go. There's another fight going on now, but we've come backstage to see James, see just James. You won. How did you do it this time?
So I hit my usual finishing move, the gut wrench powerbomb. Unfortunately, I didn't get all of it. Come down slightly to the side. But, you know, it happens sometimes.
You are obviously well known. I mean, do you see your fans around the place in Norwich?
Yeah, sometimes I do, yeah. Never anywhere exciting, you know. It's normally just like Tesco or something.
I'm just interested in how long you think you'll go on doing this.
As long as my body lets me, is the answer. I want to take it as far as I can go with it. You know, every wrestler obviously has big dreams of going to America, and all of them will tell you that. I'm another one of them, and I don't think it should be any different for me.
Rather his body than mine. That was just James. And that's it for today. As usual, we welcome your responses to anything that you've heard in the programme. Email in touch at bbc.co.uk. Leave a voice message on 0161 836 1338.